principles. And some of this I think we know, and some of this is just terminology that you can throw out the window, but maybe it'll just be thought-provoking. At the church that I'm a part of, we're trying to find language to express these three environments that we think every disciple needs if they're going to effectively grow and mature as a follower of Jesus. The first is, the first is to be part of a team. Everybody's going to be part of the team. And if you want to go to the G across from that, we'll go ahead and put the word gather or the gathering. Being part of the team is when you show up for church. All right, that's when you're sitting in an auditorium with a bunch of people, and you may not know everybody in the room, but you know you're all on the same team. We've all been to some kind of big sports event or something. You know, you don't have to know the guy over there, but if he's wearing the same shirt that is your favorite team, you already feel some sense of kinship to them. I was actually at a really important game in the history of the Tennessee Titans. That's, you know, our NFL team down in Nashville. There was a play that we call the Music City Miracle where we won this game on the very last play of the game. And I was there, and I will tell you, everybody in that stadium was just hugging each other. It didn't matter if you knew them or not, but we had an instant bond with each other, a shared experience. And so I think when we come to church and we're part of the assembly, we have that shared experience of knowing that we share the salvation that comes through Jesus, and we encourage each other in that. So for a disciple to grow effectively, they need to be part of the team and coming to the assembly. The second is, within that big assembly, find a family. Okay, literally in a church like this, a lot of y'all may be family, so you really understand that concept. In larger churches, that might be a small group at your church, is the family, the people that you know a bit better. These are, you know, all the kids' all their kids' names. You know them. You know a little something about everybody. A more intimate relationship than maybe just kind of sliding in the back row, sitting on the back row and leaving. These are the people you're kind of doing life with in a special way. And so it could be a Bible class. It could be a small group. It could be any variety of things. Because if your church is like our church, you can do something with the church every night of the week. And so what I'm getting at here is that particular family at church that keeps you connected to the team, okay? So that would be your family. And so if we're going to do the G there, I think that's where we grow. So think of it again as your Bible class, your small group. This is where you grow as a part. We all grow as part of families, don't we? All right, and then that last one, again, we're doing environments that people need to really mature as followers of Jesus. So the C, and this, again, is not a very good word, but we're going to go with the word coach. Many of us were blessed with parents that played that role for us in our life. A lot of us didn't. A lot of us need that person. So when I say coach, I'm a 55-year-old. I need a 70-year-old. To teach me how to be a good 55-year-old. I don't know anything about being a 55-year-old or a 56-year-old, but men who have gone down that road can talk to me about how to, you know, I've got my first grandbaby. He's just over a year old. You know, it's neat to share that with somebody who's already walked that road, to kind of tell me something like, you know, you're never going to get to experience this again. Don't miss it. Don't miss it. You know, as a granddad, these are the kinds of things. Now, that's sweet at the granddaddy level, but let's back up a few years. If you're a 30-year-old man or a 40-year-old man, don't you want a 50-year-old man that's made it through their 30s and 40s and remained faithful to their wife, and they can kind of walk you through the temptations of being a 30-year-old or a 40-year-old? And I know this applies to women. I just happen to be a guy, so I'm using guys as an example. I like that about the church, that we can find those people. It's kind of like Barnabas and Paul and Timothy. I think everybody needs a Barnabas in your life, somebody encouraging you. And I think everybody needs a Timothy in your life, somebody that you're encouraging, that you're coaching. You know, and Paul even says, he particularly says to women, you know, that the older women are to help teach and train the younger women. So this principle of kind of what I've tried to describe here, I just think it's important. And I think in some ways, in families, we kind of do that naturally, but maybe you'll agree that in America, families are just, they're not what they were, you know, 50 years ago. I mean, most of us, or many of us, me included, come from families that they just didn't survive. They just didn't make it. And that's cost us something. In fact, I mean, not to pick on our parents, because we do love our parents, but April and I have been married longer than anybody in our family since our great-grandparents or our grandparents. I mean, that's kind of a shame, really. So the church can help with that by making ourselves available to mentor and to coach one another. And this is the place where I think, if you want to do your G there, this is where we really go. Maybe go in the sense of being sent on mission. But really, I think this is where we're able to understand who we are and be ourselves and do what God has called us to be when we're confident in who we are. And that's what family and mentorship and coaching does for people. I think it gives you confidence of who God has created you to be. So team, family, coach, and then gather, grow, go. All right. Now, this next one I actually talked about for folks who were here Friday night. We just chatted it up a little bit. And I did talk about this next one. Embrace intentional relational discipleship. Every single word of that, I think we could break it down and spend some time on it. But I guess a key word for us right now is intentional. Actually relational is pretty good too. Here's the good news. What we're talking about when we talk about making disciples is not standing on a street corner handing out tracts. Although, I will tell you, I've done that a lot in my life, and I hate it, but when I'm done, I usually feel good about it because it made me be bold for Jesus. I do some ministry with Middle Tennessee State University, where my wife works, and a few times a year we'll do some kind of thing, big event, and I'll stand on the sidewalk, and I'll be inviting people, and I'll be honest with you, I hate every second of it. It's just a miserable thing for me to do, but somehow when I'm walking off that campus after I've given all those things, I said, at least I stood out on the street corner and I let everybody know, hey, I'm a Christian, look at me, and I'm inviting you to come be a part of this event. So we're talking about relational discipleship. And here's the principle. What that means is God has surrounded you, whoever you are, however old you are, whatever you do, God has already surrounded you with people who are disciple-making opportunities. Whether it be family members, whether it be co-workers, whether it be folks in our biology class or whatever we happen to be doing, God has probably, I think, put you exactly where he intended for you to be, and he surrounded you with relationships that you just need to be intentional about helping those become disciple-making relationships. And so for the folks who were here the other night, I did go through this, so this will be your second time through. We're going to start at the bottom of this little set of stairs. I'm still trying to find the best way to describe what I'm visually describe what I'm trying to tell you here. But the point is we kind of progress. Okay, so we're going to start at the bottom and remind ourselves that we all have a bunch of casual relationships in our life. Just people that we know their name, we say hi to them. I use the example of a person in the Shell station, you know, that's always there. They know I love Diet Coke, and they know I'm always getting gum, and so they half the time she'll already have the Diet Coke and the gum on the counter when I walk in the door. I guess if you remember the show Cheers, this is where everybody knows your name. You walk in, but that's still a pretty casual relationship. And so what we want to do is take that up a level to the next one, the M, and make that a meaningful relationship. And again, the only way that's going to happen, I guess it could happen by accident, but it'll happen if you're intentional about the relationships that God has given you. You can move a relationship from casual to meaningful, and that may look like just finding out more information about the person that you're talking to. So if we are in a restaurant and say the waiter has come over and they have brought us, the water, all right? And so I say to the person waiting on us, hey, what's your name? And April, I'm going to use your name for this. And so our server's name is April. She says, well, my name's April. I say, hey, April, I'm John, you know, and I'm here with Bob. All right. That's all we did. Now she goes about her life. But now we know her name. So we now have a casual relationship with our server in this restaurant. Okay. Now, when she comes back to take our order, I'm going to say, well, April, where are you from? You know, something like that. Now, this is a real thing. If you want to do something just for fun on purpose, give this a shot. April, where are you from? Well, I'm from McMinnville, Tennessee. All right. Hey, McMinnville, Tennessee. I know folks from McMinnville, Tennessee. All right, so we're kind of being schmoozy. I'm extroverted. This is coming pretty natural to me. But now I know a little bit of something about her. Well, tell me about your family. Da-da-da-da-da. How's everybody doing? Da-da-da-da-da. Okay, we've done that. Now, she brings the order over, you know, so she's placed the food in front of us. And I want to move this to the next stair step there, the S, which is spiritual. This is spiritual, okay? All right, so now I'm going to say, April, we pray before we eat. Is there anything we can pray for you about? Okay, now that's the risky spot. But what's the worst thing they're going to say? Nah, I'm not really into that. That's okay. But we've already had so much fun. We've learned each other's names. You know, I learned where she's from. You know, she may have told me a little something about her family or whatever. So I take a chance and I say, well, we're going to pray for something. Is there anything we can pray for? Well, I'm from the South and everybody's kind of nice down there and probably goes to church somewhere, you know. And so they'll say, yeah, I got a test coming up, you know, in biology class. It's going to be hard. Yeah, pray for that, whatever. Okay, so now I've prayed for her. Okay, you know, not with her, but, you know, she went on about her business, but she looks over and me and Bob, we're praying for this person. All right, and then what I'm going to do is take this to a disciple-making opportunity. Well, this one kind of takes a while. So here's a suggestion. Oh, the D is disciple-making. That's the next step. So we went from casual to meaningful to spiritual to disciple-making, and what I'm doing is I'm giving you a little bit of a technique, a trick you might want to try to do this. The way you get to disciple making, and I know people who have done this, and I've done this. You go to the same restaurant over and over and over. You have the same waiter over and over and over, and you kind of go through this process over and over and over. And by the way, by the time you've done this the third or fourth time, she brings somebody over to your table, and she says, "I told her that you would pray for her because her dog just passed away, and she's so sad back there in the kitchen. And I told her you guys would pray for her." That kind of thing really does happen, okay? Now that we're there, I can say to April, hey, you know what? My wife and a few other folks, April happens to be my wife, but they get together for a Bible study on Thursday. Can I give her your number and give you a shout, and maybe y'all can do a Bible study together? And it happens, okay? So the picture I'm trying to paint is an intentional example that all of us experience in our everyday lives. It's a relational example that if we're just intentional about it, we can create a disciple-making opportunity. Well, that was with a total stranger. Think about cousins. Think about just friends you grew up with, the friends in your life that maybe aren't a part of the church. If you intentionally work your way through these steps, you can create a disciple-making opportunity with anybody. Okay? So that might be the spot where I should pause and maybe... Was I clear? I rambled a little bit. Does anybody have a question about what I just described? Or a for instance, or maybe anybody has any experience with something like this of where you just felt like, God, give me an opportunity to share some good news with somebody. And you ask the question, but I don't know how to get started. This is an example of how to get started. Take a casual relationship, make it meaningful. Take a meaningful relationship and make it spiritual. Take a spiritual relationship and make it a disciple-making opportunity. Now, you wonder, now when I get to this Bible study part, what am I going to do? You know, the preacher might know how to do stuff like that. You know, our elders may know how to do stuff like that. Some of our Bible class teachers, but I don't know how to do it. Well, that's what we're going to do right after lunch. So we've got some tools that I want to share with you that make it easy for anybody and everybody to join the mission of Jesus and to have meaningful conversations with people around Scripture. And it's just these simple little bookmarks, and we'll show you how you can do that. And I really think you'll really love this because, you know, we all hear these sermons about how we're supposed to be out there making disciples, but the challenge is, but what am I supposed to do when I get there? All right, this is the answer to that question. So, stick around after lunch, and we'll talk about discovery Bible study, and maybe it'll be a useful tool for you. All right, let's turn our paper over. Probably going to have to speed up a little bit. And again, these categories are kind of jumping around because we're trying to build a vocabulary for talking about discipleship. So remember, discipleship is the process of becoming more like Christ, and so we've cutely made these next blanks spell out the word Christ. How do you know if somebody is developing as a follower of Jesus? Well, first thing is that C. They have a conversion moment. That's baptism. Okay, when they make a decision, I used to be this, now I want to be that. And by the way, if you've never had the joy of just being in the water with somebody when they're being baptized, it's just one of the most, it's kind of like having babies or being at least the father of a baby. I've had both experiences, and they're absolutely wonderful. All All right? All right. So the next two kind of go together, the H and the R. When you see a person commit to holy and righteous living, all right, maybe this person comes up to you and says, you know, I just can't watch that TV show anymore. It just doesn't fit. Jesus is doing something in me, so, you know, there's some things that got to change in my life. So when people start making decisions to live holy and righteous lives, small steps though they may be. I remember there was a kid, he used to play, you know, some pretty violent video games. There's a little thing where you turn the blood off on the video game. He did that because it just didn't fit with who he thought God was making him to be. That's just a little baby step that says he's thinking differently about, you know, what he should be putting into his head. And I thought, that, well, that's a baby step of somebody who's developing as a follower of Jesus, okay? So the C is conversion, then holy and righteous living. And then when you see somebody immerse themselves in the life of the church, that's an indication that they are growing as a follower of Jesus. All of a sudden, they're starting to hang around with people who are there to build them up, okay, and not just folks to get in trouble. Our youth minister at church has a statement that there's a few statements in this world that I think are axioms that are just absolutely always true. And he tells our youth group all the time, and they can all say it out loud, you are who you hang around, period. You are who you hang around. So if you're hanging around with people that are into this, you're going to probably be like that. If you're hanging around with people that are into this, you're probably going to be like that. So the idea here is when we see people begin to immerse themselves in the life of the church, meaning they're hanging out with you guys, they're probably growing as a follower of Jesus. Because think about some of the things that we're calling people to walk away from. And I'm going to use a pretty extreme example because where I'm from, this happens all the time. But we're always calling people, you know, to live God-honoring lifestyles and relationships. And so we have folks that, you know, are drawn to, you know, same-sex kinds of situations. And we're calling them to live a more God-honoring lifestyle. Okay, you have to remember, they're same-sex attracted all week long. So how are we going to call them away from something by 1 hour on Sunday? You can't. I mean, they're, you know, 1 hour on Sunday is awesome. But if you're going to grow a disciple of Jesus, you got to remember that this person, or let's pick a person with any kind of addiction, alcoholism. They're an alcoholic every day, not just on, you know, Sunday morning's not going to get it, all right? So we want to seek to have relationships with them and immerse them in the life of the church where they have relationships with a lot of people where we can help them have another option for their life. So again, in my extreme example, and I don't know, you know, what this is like around here, but in, you know, in a bigger city, it's a big deal. People who have same-sex attraction, remember, they have that all week long. And so Sunday morning's not enough. If they're an alcoholic, they're an alcoholic all week long. So Sunday morning's not just enough. There's kind of a popular story that's used quite a bit by a preacher who had baptized a gang leader. And so it was a really cool experience. So the gang leader starts coming to church, and he's just on fire. But after a few weeks, he just fades away. He doesn't know where he went. Well, this preacher comes across this guy sometime later, and he says, well, what happened? He goes, man, when I was part of my gang, we were together all the time. I said, you guys just meet on Sunday morning. You know, I needed more than what you guys were offering me. I needed a life in community with people, and you guys were just giving me Sunday morning. So I think you guys get the principle. When we as Christians are calling people to live God-honoring lives, remember, we're calling them to leave something big, a big part of their life. So we need to be the kind of community that gives them a really good option for walking away from what we're calling them from. All right, the S is when you see people start serving others in ministry. You know, part of following Jesus and maturing as a follower of Jesus is to get that it's not all about us, right? You know, it's not about what we want. That's a tough one for church folks because we all, you know, we're human. We have the things we like and don't like. We have the songs we like and don't like. We have our preferences and these kinds of things. But really, I think growing as a follower of Jesus is to understand that, well, maybe it's not all about me, you know. Maybe we can do this because it's edifying to that person. Maybe we can do that because it's edifying to that person because I think that matters. It's not all about me. All right, and then the T is, and this is a big one, when we begin to tell others about Jesus. And again, I want to go ahead and just make this statement now. The T is tell others about Jesus as a benchmark that someone is maturing as a follower of Jesus. two things. One, these things aren't particularly chronological, because I think new Christians are the people most apt to want to tell other people about Jesus. Okay, so that can happen pretty quickly. But I do think that our churches, including me for many, many years, I sat in church forever and never even thought about telling anybody else about Jesus. I just figured my job was to be a good guy. All right. Now, how do we tell other people about Jesus? Because remember, Jesus' final words were to tell us all to go make disciples. And that, so how do we do that? In a variety of ways. So here would be the statement. We're not all evangelists. Ephesians 4 is very clear that some are given to be evangelists for the equipping and the building up of the church. Some people have that gift. But all of us are witnesses. All of us, Jesus says, you will be my witnesses in Luke or John or maybe both. What is a witness? A witness is somebody who testifies to what they have seen, heard, or experienced. Okay? So if I saw a car wreck out here, I don't have to be an expert on cars to tell you what I saw happen. Right? I can say, yeah, I saw this car was coming this way, this car was going that way, and this is what happened. Okay? That's what being a witness is. So all of us can witness, we can testify to what we have experienced about God, what we experienced about Jesus, what we have experienced about living life in the church. That's a powerful witness. I think Brother Jack asked me yesterday, do people still want to hear a gospel message? And the answer, I think, is absolutely yes, but especially this way, if they hear the difference it made in your life. For instance, if I were to say, hey, I'm John. I grew up in the church. Don't remember a day when I wasn't part of the church, but I was living my life with one foot in the church and one foot in the world. And I was just kind of walking that line my whole life, and I just really wasn't getting anywhere. And then one day, I got serious about following Jesus. So I committed, and I just decided, I'm all in. All right? I'm going to walk with Jesus. And since that, so I was baptized. I gave my life to Jesus. And since that day, man, I have purpose. I have passion. I have direction for my life. And I can't wait to see what God's going to do. My marriage is better. My life is better. Everything's better. Okay, that's the gospel message. I gave myself to Jesus. You know, I committed to him. I submitted to his authority. But it's couched within what I've experienced. So that's a witness. So all of us need to really figure out kind of that 100-word witness. What's your story? What's your story? And be bold to tell your story. And don't be scared to tell your story if it's got stuff in there you don't like. Because, you know, I'm going to tell you the truth. That's the part people care about. So I'm going to tell you all this. I was a dipper, snuff, this guy, redneck, all that, most of my life for 37 years. Okay? Did Jesus help me walk away from that? And that's so now when I go, I see somebody at the ball game, they got a big wad of tobacco in their spit, and I go up to them and say, man, I know what that's like, you know, da-da-da-da-da, but you know what? I know that's something you're dragging around and that you really can't function today without it, but let me tell you how you can. And this was my experience. Now, all of a sudden, he's more apt to listen to me because I was honest with him, and I was honest with you guys about how imperfect I am. I was a minister for most of those years, and I'm sitting in my office with a big old dip in, you know, and I felt like a fool. But that's what tobacco does. It's an addiction, and it just did its thing. I will tell you the reason why I was able to walk away from that, just because I think it's helpful. I was doing a Celebrate Recovery study. I was the leader of that study, and I realized the guys in the group, they weren't giving up the thing that they were there to give up. And I realized it's because they saw me just spitting in a garbage can the whole time. We're having a Celebrate Recovery meeting, all right? And I thought, and then so I challenged them one day. I said, guys, I don't think I can do it, but I'll quit dipping if you guys will get serious about the thing that you're here for. And we did, and God did the thing. I quit dipping, and by the time we ended, all those guys were on like a 100-day streak of walking away from whatever it was that they were trying to get away from. So it was pretty cool. Anyway, I just share that story with you. I don't know why, but to say, I've just told y'all I'm not perfect, and I hope y'all don't like me less. But I hope maybe it helps us connect maybe a little bit more, that we're just not perfect people. You got that story in your life too. All right, we got to go so fast. It's not even funny now. How does... Yep. All right, we'll keep going. All right, but I will speed up. All right, how a disciple grows. Got this from some folks called Real Life Discipleship out in Idaho. Let's remember, people are dead without Jesus. It's a big deal. Why do you want to make disciples? Because your friends at work, school, family members, understand without Jesus, they're dead. They really, really are. And hell's real, okay? You know, I think in modern day world, we want to sentimentalize that or something. But separation from God is real. I can't tell you exactly what hell looks like, but I know it is being forever separated from God in whose image we were created. That can't be good, right? Whatever that is. But it's real, okay? All right, so you're dead. Then you become an infant. This, y'all can fill in these blanks probably without me based on the letters, but you become an infant. When you're an infant, you need to be fed. Right? This is the life cycle of a disciple. Everything is about you at this point. Feed me. I have a grandson. He has to be helped. He cannot do this without help. All right. So his mama and the rest of us get the joy of providing for him while he's an infant. And then he becomes a child. And so he's still pretty inwardly focused, but he's able to do some things, but he is pretty inwardly focused. And this is the scary part, because I'm going to step on my toes and your toes at the same time. This is when we say things like, I don't want anybody else in my small group. I like it just the way it is. I'm growing, but I'm still kind of a child. Okay? All right, let me give a little qualifier. It may be the kind of group where you don't need to add people. Like my Celebrate Recovery group, you just can't add new people all the time. You got to build a level of communication with each other and trust and to talk about. But in most groups, a typical small group, let's keep them open. You know, there's always a seat for one more. I think that's kind of a good idea. All right, then you become a young adult. This is where you say, you know what, I think I could start a small group if somebody just kind of coached me through it a little bit. That's part of maturing. April and I have a small group full of 20-year-olds, and it's kind of fun watching them grow up. You know, in their young 20s, they're still pretty inwardly focused, but a lot of them are starting to get married to each other and stuff, and it's just amazing to watch this transformation that is coming over those folks as they grow. So they're young adults. They just need a little help, but they can do it. And then you become a parent, which for those of us in this room who are parents and grandparents, that's a pretty exciting time, isn't it? You get to see what it's like to raise that next generation. And so that's the idea in discipleship as well. Let's grow to become parents. Let's help raise the next generation. Okay? All right, again, moving rather quickly, we'll go to there are disciple-making movements all around the world. In America, you know, sometimes, especially if you watch the news or read, you know, our different publications, you know that the church, not just the churches of Christ, the churches in general, they're kind of in trouble. Less people every year go to some kind of church, okay? And, you know, the pandemic is kind of putting that on steroids, by the way. That's speeding up. People are kind of figuring out, I don't have to go to church, you know. So there's going to be some challenges for us, but as I've expressed earlier, church is important. But there are groups around the world that where Christianity is growing like crazy. I think the statistic is true that there are more Christians in China right now than there are in America. Okay, and they have to meet underground, basically. And then the fastest growing church right now in the world, and this should excite all of us, is in Iran. And it's being led by women. There's a neat video you can watch on YouTube. I cannot remember. Do you remember what it's called? All right, but let's pause for a minute and think about how exciting that fact is. We know that Muslim women, you know, face a lot of challenges in their world, but they're leading Iran to they're finding a better way. Jesus is setting them free. Okay, keep going. All right, first thing you got to do, if you want to be part of these exciting disciple-making movements that are going around the world, you got to decide to embrace multiplication. Decide you want to reach all of Glen Rock and Hanover and York, and I don't know, I'm trying to get the lay of the land. Just decide that's a good thing. Let's reach everybody with the message of Jesus. Not just a few. Let's reach everybody. Okay? Embrace multiplication. We'll talk about what multiplication means before the day is over. And start this with prayer and fasting. So Dave was up here earlier talking about the prayer opportunities that you guys have coming up. And, yeah, do that. Start with prayer. Most times in the church and in the churches of Christ, I've been here for 55 years, so I can say what I want to about it. I don't know any other way. But, you know, we make our plans and then we pray that God will bless them. I think there is a way to pray your way towards your plans. I think we've seen groups around the world that they will pray and pray and pray, and then they will reach the point, I know what God wants us to do now. Let's go do that. I don't know how that works because I'm an American Church of Christ person. And so I only know one way, make plans and pray for God to bless them. But I do believe that you can pray your way towards the plans that God will lead you to do. All right, and fasting. Fasting is not a thing that's been on a lot of our radar, but I know y'all know this. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus just assumed we fast. I mean, he assumed that we pray. He assumed that we give, and he gave us instructions for that. And then in the same vein, he says, and now, when you fast? And then for us, we're kind of like, now, wait a minute. That sounds like a fancy thing that Jews do or early Christians did. It really is a cool exercise. So if it hasn't been part of your typical thing, give it a try. Study up on it. Do the safe thing. Do it the right way. But I am convinced that God does something when we fast that is a little different. You depend on God in a way you never have before. All right, moving real quickly now. Serve with purpose. Do the things that we do. The programs at our church, they are all exist so that we get to tell somebody about Jesus. Okay, it's nice to feed people, and it is. We should feed people. That's the ethic of Christianity. But when we're feeding people, let's just go ahead and tell them about Jesus too. Okay, so everything we do, let it end with, and let me invite you to be part of this community. Let me tell you about Jesus. That's what these movements are doing. Seek persons of peace. There are people all around the surrounding counties that will give you access to other people. And because I have talked too long, I won't be able to give you I'll try to do it during the sermon. But find persons of peace is based on, I think, Luke 10 and Act 10, these people that give you access to other people. And then as they become followers of Jesus, leave them in their environment because they can keep bringing more out of there. You know, they're kind of on mission. The perfect example would be if I'm doing college ministry on a college campus and I start a Bible study with the president of a fraternity, that's strategic. He becomes a person of peace. Now I'm doing a Bible study in the fraternity house, and that's a true story. Okay, so that makes him a person of peace. He gives me access to more people. You can figure that out. All right, use a form of discovery Bible study or a reproducible tool. Here's the deal. Churches grow and movements happen when every member of the church has the tools to be part of the mission. If it's just the preacher and just the elders, it can only go that far. Okay, but if every person in this room is a part of the mission, then that's when churches exponentially grow and movements start to happen. And by movement, I mean then all of a sudden y'all are planting the church down here because it's a great opportunity. And so a bunch of you guys go do that. And then over here, you know, we do it again over here. And then all of a sudden you look up and you realize, okay, it was York that planted this church. Yeah, York planted this church. What exciting times that must have been for the York congregation to plant this church. How exciting it would be for you guys. And maybe you have done it, and so forgive me if there's this history, I don't know. But today, 2 years from now, what happens when you guys are planting a church in some place and the excitement that would come along with that? All right, but that happens when you have a reproducible tool like Discovery Bible Study. And then you start to multiply baptisms and groups. Okay, this is important because at some point, what is the name of our movement? Restoration Movement. If you know any Restoration Movement history, what you know is that Barton W. Stone's biography is called Like a Fire and Dry Stubble. What that means is at some point, what we're doing and what we've been talking about, this disciple-making thing, it just gets out of control. And I say let that happen. You know, I know in our churches we want to make sure we're doing the right thing and we kind of control everything that's happening. I get that. I've been that way myself. But at some point, just let God do the thing that he's doing. You know, just let God do the thing. That's what is involved there. I'll talk about this last one, the basics of discipleship groups and discovery Bible study in the training session afterwards. We'll get into the details of what that can look like. Well, thank you, guys. We're going to have church here in about 10 minutes. It's great to be with you, and so we'll pick up the story there in just a few minutes.